Welcome to your weekly English radio magazine on CJMQ 88.9 FM in Sherbrooke and CIDI 99.1 FM in the Lake Brome area. It's the Friday Drive, news commentary, 30-30 sports, arts and culture, and the interview of the week. Local events and issues for townshippers from townshippers. The Friday Drive starts right now with your host, Daniel Coulomb. 30-30 Sports on the Friday Drive.
It's sports to start this whole affair with. John Edwards in the radio. Man, you must be so excited about the Masters this weekend.
Oh, yes. Nothing like the sound of piped-in bird music to remind me that spring is here.
There you go. But before we go there, let's talk about your final thoughts regarding March Madness. Did you watch that final game Monday night?
I did. As epic as Houston's comeback on Saturday to beat Duke was, their fail in the last 20 seconds was just remarkable. I mean, they led most of the game, gave up the lead late and pretty back and forth all night. And then they get the ball with 20 seconds left. They don't even get a shot off. Like, what are you doing?
You got to get a shot off.
Well, I mean, yeah, you've just get something together that gives you a chance to win. And hell, I think Florida even seemed surprised that the game was over.
Yeah. I have to say, just looking at the face of the coach was just priceless right there.
No, because they've gone and, you know, in college game, they got timeouts after timeouts after timeouts. So, I mean, you know, he's drawn something up. And if he drew that up, he should quit immediately. I'm certain he didn't. So, you know, what the heck happened?
That's amazing. All right. So the bracket is bust, huh?
Yeah. Well, mine was busted once I thought Ricky Pitino could last longer than 7 seconds. So, you know.
You're a sight to behold. There's no doubt about that. All right, John, the significance of the coming of Ivan Demidov and how to manage the expectations for a 19-year-old. I don't know if the Montreal fan base has been excited about a player coming to the team ever. Not like this, anyway.
Probably not since Guy Lafleur. The hype is seeming that way. It's getting to that level. I mean, I think on some level it helps that he's coming mid-season. He'll get into games right away, and the focus will be on, you know, on the games that are happening. There won't be sort of a training camp and a summer's worth of hype about what's he going to do. He's just going to have to get into it.
He's going to be thrown in the deep end of the pool and see if he can swim right away.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they'll see what he can do pretty quickly. I mean, he had a good season with St. Petersburg in the KHL, and that's a tough league for a 19-year-old to get into. He was the youngest player they've, I think, ever had. You know, he's played against men all year, so we'll see how ready he is to handle the NHL level. And in some ways, this is sort of a low-stakes way for him to start. It's looking like one round of playoffs, maybe two, but I don't think anyone is expecting the parade to take the usual route this year, you know, but this will get him a chance to get some experience and then head into next year with a full offseason under his training and practice under his belt.
The St. Petersburg team said they would not let him go until the 31st of May. What do you think happened? Do you think there was a little envelope of money there somehow, or did Roman Rotenberg just see it in his heart to let the kid go?
The answer to most questions is money. So I wouldn't be surprised if some money went in the St. Petersburg direction, you know, or there was a decision made that he wasn't going to stick around. So there wasn't any reason to hold him back. But yeah, the answer to your question is probably money.
It's very big of them. He got a 3-year contract with a bonus if he wins the Conn Smythe. What are the chances?
I it would be extremely unlikely that they'll have to pay that out, but, you know, stranger things have happened.
You know, John, it reminds me of when P.K. Subban came to the Canadians just before the start of round one a few years ago, and they started against what team?
Capitals.
That's right. Jacob Fowler also signed for the Canadians this week.
Hopefully a long-term solution to the goaltending question. He played 2 years at Boston College. They were hoping to be in the Frozen Four this weekend, but they got knocked out by Denver 2 weeks ago. So that put Fowler in a position to sign. He decided to leave BC a couple of years early and head to the pros. So he's now practicing with Laval, and he'll be with them through their playoff run. And he may yet win goalie of the year in the NCAA today. We'll find out not long after we're done here.
All right, and I've got tickets for the April 16 game in Laval. Hopefully, I'll be able to give you a scouting report next week.
hopefully he plays. That would be nice.
Yeah. Ray Shiro passed away also, John, this week.
Longtime GM with the bunch of teams, Pittsburgh, Senators, most recently with Minnesota. He was only 62, I think, so it's surprising to see him gone that young.
His dad was Fred Shiro. He was the coach for the Flyers in the 70s, and he was the one chiefly responsible for the Flyers getting their first two cups.
Yeah, Fred Shiro was the brains behind the Broad Street Bullies, and Ray ended up playing at St. Lawrence, doing college hockey there, and then in 92, when the Senators started, he joined them as an assistant general manager, and then sort of has worked his way through and eventually won the Stanley Cup in 2015.
Fantastic. Talk to you 5:30.
Yep, we'll see you then.
Of course there's music, but we also talk about a lot of issues that matter to you. You're listening to The Friday Drive on CJMQ 88.9 FM and CIDI 99.1 FM.
Running out, no one else around but me. Steady losing my mind. Over shadows and gravity. Without you, there ain't no place for me to hide. Without you, there's no way I can sleep tonight. What I do, oh, a little bit of peace and quiet. Without you, I keep slipping in. What you waiting for? Signs of physical. I can do this by myself. Without you, there ain't no place for me to hide. Without you, there's no way I can sleep tonight. What I do for a little bit of peace and quiet.
The Weekly News Review with longtime Townships journalist Mike McDevitt on The Friday Drive.
Time now for the Weekly News Review. Mike McDevitt not available this week. Here to help make sense of the news is a township-based economic development expert, Michel Rattier. Michel, thank you so much for subbing in. Much appreciated.
Oh, I appreciate the invite, and good afternoon to you, Daniel.
All right. As always, plenty of things to unpack. Michel, let's start at the top. Federal elections just a tad more than 2 weeks away. With the big day coming up, the political landscape seems to be stabilizing. Poll numbers are leveling off. Certainly leaders not named Carney are needing to retool their messages. And the question is, are Canadians starting to tune in?
Yeah, I think they are. There's an interesting poll that came was commissioned by the Globe and Mail in La Presse 2 days ago, which asked Canadians, and this is a solid poll, by the way, and asked Canadians what are the key issues that they have closest to their hearts in the context of this election. Dealing with the U.S. president, Canada had a score. 47% of Canadians think that dealing with Mr. Trump was important, and 48% of Quebecers did the same or answered the same. The second issue is the economy, and knowing that dealing with Mr. Trump and the tariffs is a solid economic issue, we're looking at plus 70% of Quebecers and Canadians that think that dealing with the economy and Mr. Trump are extremely important. A second question that was asked in that poll is, who is best suited to negotiate and deal with Trump? 62% of Canadians found in that poll that it was Mr. Carney, and 66% of Quebecers found that it was Mr. Carney better suited to negotiate with President Trump.
Michel, Quebecers seem to feel they have to vote for the Liberals and not for the Bloc Québécois to strategically assure that M. Poilievre won't be elected because of his lack of popularity here, or even worse, how voters here seem to perceive him as Trump light. Do you agree with that?
Part of the Quebec electorate that are probably voting strategically in this federal election. But again, back to this poll by the Globe and Mail in La Presse, there could be that slice that are voting strategically. But still, when we're looking at upwards of 70%, there's a huge slice of the population in Quebec that are not putting the Bloc aside and the key issues that are close to Quebecers' hearts. But in the case of this election, they are turning towards the Liberal Party and Mr. Carney to ensure that not only Canadian sovereignty will be protected, but the economic security of all Canadians and Quebecers will be looked after. He seems to be the better man positioned to do that.
I got it. All right, let's speak about the economy. Let's turn to tariffs. Quebec, with its export-heavy economy, has a lot at stake. New tariffs, whether on aluminum or lumber or agricultural products, going to hit us hard, not just businesses, but jobs and regional economies. We're starting to talk about the big R word, Michel, recession.
Yeah, I don't think we're there yet. Every day is a surprise with respect to what's coming out of Washington. And of course, they are demonstrating that they do not have a grasp of what they are doing and trying to cover themselves to say this was the bigger plan since the beginning. But that's hard to swallow. Tariffs are right now, even if some people may be relieved by the fact that they backtrack on the reciprocity tariffs, what Canada and Quebec and the Eastern Townships are looking at right now is 25% on steel, aluminum. Those are the fentanyl tariffs that came out in March. 14.5% on our softwood lumber. Quebec is the second biggest exporter of softwood lumber to the United States. 10% on energy. This will have an impact on the economy. Our selling prices of those goods will become more expensive. Cost of lumber, steel, aluminum, aerospace, automotive components and so forth are putting at risk 24 billion of our exports. The softwood industry, Quebec is 3.5 billion in 2024 of sales of softwood. Roughly, the tariffs are putting an added $525 million more on that price ticket. So the impact on Quebec economy, not looking good. In the next 3 months, we might see our GDP to contract by a little over half a percentage point. We might lose $2 billion in export value. Employment, there's a potential of 10,000 jobs losses. And if we bring that to the Eastern Townships, we are looking in the next 3 months at a potential of 5,000 jobs that could be lost because of these specific tariffs on exactly the key goods that we sell, either in the townships in Quebec and throughout Canada. That's hard to swallow. So it ain't beautiful what's coming up right now.
Gee, it almost feels like Mr. Trump is making this up on the fly. All right. It's clear, Michel, that the model for the past 40-some years is under pressure, and Canada needs to be nimble, strategic, and bold moving forward. I get that. But this brings me to the deeper question. Was Brian Mulroney wrong in pushing globalization 40 years ago? What we gained, was it worth all this nonsense today?
Yeah, I take a little objection to the assertion that Brian Mulroney pushed globalization when Canada was already a globalized economy. Let me remind you, we had an auto pact with the United States since 1965, already had a free trade agreement with the United States since 1988. What Brian Mulroney brought to the table after being strongly reelected, and his second election was based on this, was a freer trade agreement with the United States and Mexico. Now, if we look at our exports, specific exports to the United States since Brian Mulroney's second election, our exports went from $200 billion to more than half a trillion over that time period. Our exports, total world exports, went up 214%. Where we still have a challenge here is with respect to what is called the production output per capita. Now, that only grew by 28%. Why? Over the last 5 to 8, maybe 10 years, our population grew more than any other country of the G7. Was Mr. Mulroney right with globalization? I think Mr. Mulroney was right to push for Canada to have better deals with our American partner. I'd like to remind you, that's our only neighbor, right? So I think it was fine that we get into such a deal. He is not, Mr. Mulroney, responsible, nor all other former presidents responsible for what is happening to Canada right now.
Trump did it again yesterday. He's so good at this. He about-faced on his decision regarding many other countries, but these tariffs with China, it got even worse, now up to 125%. The U.S. is China's biggest customer. The economy is not good for them now. The Americans are not only making this tense economically, but could this even lead to military action?
Military action is I don't see that in the immediate future. We never know with Mr. Trump. One day he's growling against Canada and Greenland, the next day it's against China, then it's Mexico. So, this is a bad pun. Let's keep our powder dry when we talk about military issues. This brings me to say, moving forward, Canada needs to take the opportunity to negotiate. First of all, this is on the calendar. Negotiations should start immediately after the next election. But Canada should take the opportunity to intensify its relations with European Union, with South Korea, with Japan, and other Pacific nations. We need to tighten our trade with Mexico also. Last year, we sold for almost 2 billion of goods just from Quebec to our Mexican neighbor. And the biggest other thing we need to do in Canada is, again, take this opportunity to eliminate barriers between provinces as much as we can. If we do these things in the short run, the next 6 to 9 months, we will at least give ourselves kind of a protective dome against the jump of emotions that Trump may have in the course of this year and the next 4 years, I'd like to remind everyone.
Yeah, it's just not easy to do on a dime, you know?
No, you're right. You know, it'll take at least a loony or two to be able to turn the corner on this.
I got you. Michael McDevitt, not available this week. It's Townships-based economic development expert Michel Ratier in this week. Thank you so much. Much appreciated. Have a great weekend.
Yes, you too, Dan. Take care.
If you have any comments or questions regarding what you hear on today's show, email us at cjmqnews@yahoo.ca.
Let your light shine so bright.
Time for your weekly information from the Lake Brome, Missisquoi area on the Friday Drive.
Taylor McClure now. Taylor reports from the Brome, Missisquoi region with stories for you from this week. Taylor McClure, I trust you're doing well.
Yes, I'm not doing so bad. How are you doing today, Daniel?
Quite well, thank you very much. Here we are nearing mid-April, and can you believe Easter already next week? My goodness.
I know, time is flying. Time is just flying.
To be sure. Wow. All right, Taylor, let's start with Action Lac Waterloo.
Yeah, so Action Lac Waterloo and the town of Waterloo held a press conference together on April 9th at the town hall to inform the community of the actions that are being taken to preserve the health of Lake Waterloo for 2025. So CIDI spoke with Bianca Duceppe, who is the president of Action Lac Waterloo, and she highlighted three major priorities for the organization in 2025. And these priorities stem from a large research project that was conducted last summer in Lake Waterloo to provide Action Lac Waterloo with a better portrait on the lake's conditions and the different challenges that need to be addressed. Of course, an action plan was then developed with some recommendations. So one of the first priorities was hiring a project manager to implement an action plan. The second was to get a better picture of the watershed of Lake Waterloo in order to reduce pollutants at the source. So they're going to be conducting a large-scale sampling campaign, which will be conducted starting this month, actually, up until around November to establish a baseline for water quality in the Lake Waterloo's tributaries. And the third major priority is to raise awareness and engagement among citizens, of course, with the goal of informing and mobilizing residents around the best practices to reduce pollution in order to preserve the health of the lake and to slow its aging process. So these are the three main priorities for Action Lac Waterloo. And with the financial support and moral support of the town of Waterloo, which is also taking steps to preserve as many natural environments in the municipality as possible. So I spoke with the mayor, Jean-Marie Lachapelle, at the press conference as well, and he mentioned that the municipality has signed an agreement with Granby-based conservation organization, CETSI, to put land that is owned by the municipality into conservation, including land that surrounds the lake. And there are also regulations around the use of pesticides and herbicides to avoid having these pollutants enter the lake. And essentially, no landowner is actually even allowed to use these on their land. Together, the municipality and Action Lac Waterloo are working to try to preserve the lake as best as they can. It will be interesting to see what comes out of their action plan this year.
Absolutely. Also, Autism Awareness Month, Taylor.
For those who might not be aware, April marks Autism Awareness Month or World Autism Month. And the Dixville Foundation, which I'm sure many of your listeners are aware of, considering they've served your community for a number of years, are launching their annual fundraising and financing campaign. CIDI spoke with the Dixville Foundation because they are also serving the Bromissisquoi community now, following the recent dissolution of the Butters Foundation. So this is why we kind of had a conversation with them. And I spoke with Donald Warnholtz, who's the general director of the Dixville Foundation, and he mentioned that raising awareness is all about, you know, ensuring that people are aware as to what it means for someone to live with an autism spectrum disorder and or learning a disability, you know, to ensure social inclusion. It's also important for those living with an autism spectrum disorder and or learning disability to be aware as well as to what services and support exist in their communities. He mentioned that there can sometimes be long waiting lists, you know, in the public healthcare system. So the Dixville Foundation is there to complement these services and to provide help in the meantime. So for the financing campaign this year, the Dixville Foundation is partnering with 10 different restaurants and businesses in Sherbrooke and its surrounding areas. And there are 25 different points of service where these businesses will give a portion of their sales for the month. He noted that there is a real willingness and wanting to help here in the Eastern Townships that he finds really great to see. For those listeners out there who are looking for more information either about the Dixville Foundation, their services, the awareness or fundraising campaign, you can always refer to the website for more details, as Donald pointed out, and you can always reach out to the foundation as well.
Greetings to Don Warholtz, a very busy man in the Eastern Townships, to be sure.
Indeed. Indeed.
Taylor McClure, have yourself a great weekend. We talk next week.
Yes, you too, Daniel. Thanks a lot.
Townships weather tonight, clouds, low minus 3. Tomorrow, a mix of sun and cloud, high 11. Saturday night, cloudy, low minus 3. Sunday, mix of sun and cloud, high 12. In long range for Monday, sunshine, high of 14 degrees. Great Ed Humphrey coming up just after 5 o'clock. The interview of the week this week, Mayor Jody Stone from Stanstead, coming up at 5:10. 5:30 sports with John Edwards, 5:40 arts and culture with Sonia. On the Friday drive at CIDI FM and CJMQ 88.9 FM.